Baby, a song, you make me wanna roll my windows down and cruise. Hey, baby. Yeah, when I first saw that bikini top on her, she's popping right out of the South Georgia water. Thought, oh, good Lord, she had them long tan legs. Couldn't help myself, so I walked up and said, well, baby, you a song, you make me wanna roll my windows down and cruise down a back road, blowing stop signs through the middle, every little farm town with you.
Will, you wanna know the only reason that I picked this song?
Why?
I googled Florida, because I'm excited about spring break, and Florida Georgia Line came up. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Will and Sam in the morning, because... Again, Sam Ferentz has disappeared again.
Yeah.
I think he just makes cameo appearances now.
Probably. He's like our guest star.
Yeah. Well, all right. It's the Will and Sam show now. We're rebranding. Welcome to the Will and Sam show. I'm not Will. I'm actually Sam. Sam Anthony.
I'm Will.
That's true. That's you.
Will I am.
Will I am and Sam I am? Is that?
Yeah. That's Will awful. I am and Sam Anthony. Sam Anthony.
There we go. You know, it's iconic. Yeah. The man with two first names. I've told you why they say don't trust someone with two first names, right?
No.
Oh, because like people always told me that, and I just never got it.
Right.
And I was like, all right, like I should probably Google this, because this is going to be a thing forever. Like I go to the airport, and they're like, oh, you have two first names. And I'm just like, really? I was like,
Ricky Bobby.
But apparently, all right, this is why. All of the notable assassins have two first names. Lee Harvey Oswald. Who the heck killed Abraham Lincoln?
John Wilkes Booth.
Yep. I guess John and Wilkes.
I guess.
Because they have two first names, but that's how that came out of it.
Huh.
Most people that had two first names.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, lock your doors at night, Will.
Jeez. I lived with this man for a year. I didn't even know he would grow up to be.
No, I wouldn't kill you in that roommate circle. I can say that because he won't listen to this show. Love you, PBS. All right. So, you know, we were kind of talking about it before we went on here. You know, before I played some really banging Florida Georgia Line.
Of course.
From 6 years ago, by the
way. Wow. I know. That does not feel like it was 6 years ago.
I know, right? Like, I thought that would be, you know, wow. So,
what a simpler time, 2012. Or 2013, I guess, at this point.
No, yeah, 2013. Wow. Ugh.
We're so old.
I know. You know, I remember being like, oh, I can't wait till I'm 21. I can go to bars. And now I'm 22 and I'm like, I spend all my money at bars. I don't know if I can. It's not swearing. I can say it on the radio. We're college kids.
Yeah.
They don't know what we do. Do you ever know? All right. This is another. I'm just going to open up with fun facts.
Okay.
Want to know how RMU Radio started?
How?
It was two kids that were literally just doing a podcast or like a radio show in their dorm room. They were just like, oh, we're just going to record it, put it over like the internet.
Wow.
And Michael DeLauro, who used to be the head of the AMC, was like, hey, like, do you guys want to do this? But like, we'll give you a place to do it. And they were like, yeah, sure. And then RMU Radio was born.
Wow. And then they found out that we're too close to the airport, so we can't actually put it on the radio.
So we're online. But, you know, that's the way. Who listens to radio besides people in their cars?
I mean, true. I used to, but I was also working in a like a warehouse area. So that
podcast, man, they're the wave of the future. So
yeah. Yeah, even when I was listening to the radio, it was through a radio app.
Exactly. So you know, that, yeah.
Yeah.
all right. So, you know, stuff that we can talk about today. So, you know, first off, the mid-major top 25 came out.
Oh, boy.
Again, women's basketball not getting votes since they did right before they lost to Mount St. Mary's.
Shocker.
That hurts you. But yeah, I don't know. I still think they should get votes, but it's hard because, like, a team that's getting just one vote is Kent State. And Robert Morris, I mean, they played Kent State last year and didn't go so well.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's last year and the teams are different. But even then, you know, teams like Radford are just getting 9 votes in the mid-major top 25. And they're a team that's projected to be a 15 seed.
Right,
very
so,
good.
Yeah.
So it's tough. It's tough to get votes in there.
It's also really frustrating just because it's the NEC. And, like, I feel like, you know, like, it's fun watching us destroy everybody. But, like, at the same time, you know it's not really going to do anything because, you know, the NEC has negative respect around the NCAA.
Yes.
And I mean, I don't think there's really an answer to fixing that besides us going to a different conference.
Yeah, because like, I mean, have you seen NIU Brooklyn? I mean, they don't deserve recognition, yet they've gone and beaten some top teams in that conference, and that just shows you how much parity there is.
Right.
Which sucks.
Yeah.
It does, because you're right. You could have a year like Robert Morris where they've been so much better for really, you know, 8 years.
Right. And they've been averaging, I think it's like around 20 points. It might be a little less now because they've had a few close games. Yeah. But I know they were averaging winning by 20 points a game in conference.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, it's unfortunate because the only way that they would move is if men's basketball was really successful.
You can't dictate a move on women's basketball. Right. It's just never going to happen.
But if they're like, if it was reversed and RMU men's was winning by averaging 20 points in conference, we'd be out of the NEC in a heartbeat.
Yeah. I'll tell you though, you know what makes me sad?
Hmm.
You know how many days it's been since Robert Morris was in the NCAA tournament?
Oh, it's close to 4 years now, right?
No, they were in 2 years ago.
Oh, you mean women's?
Yeah. Not women's. Sorry.
I don't know.
713 days.
Hmm.
Does it feel like 713 days?
Yeah. I mean, men's hasn't been there since we've been here, so.
That's depressing. But hey, you know, I think this could be a really good year for them.
Yeah.
I think no matter what, the NEC basketball tournament is going to be fun because – I was reading an article. It's written by Ryan Peters. Mm-hmm. If you don't follow him on Twitter.
Yeah, he's from Sacred Heart, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw you you retweeted it or quote tweeted it or something.
Yeah, I follow him, and he is just – he's a very good – like, even though, like, he's a very clear Sacred Heart guy, but that'd be kind of, like, the same stance that, like, clearly, like, we're favorable towards Robert Morris.
Right.
But he does very good stuff in terms of he really has a pulse of the conference.
Mm-hmm.
So I enjoy his stuff because – He'll put out stuff where it's like he gave the exact scenario for like a 4-way tie in the conference, which is no longer no, it is possible. It's possible for a 4-way tie still. Because if Sacred Heart wins out, Robert Morris and Fairleigh Dickinson each lose one game and St. Francis loses both.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you know, you're in this really wonky situation.
Which I still think – I think St. Francis would – still,
yeah,
would
they would still
the
be the one
seed. And we'd still probably be the 3 seed.
We'd be the 4 seed.
Really?
Yeah. Because it would all depend on how we did against all those teams together, and we have the worst record against all of them.
Except for, well, did we beat Sacred Heart the first time?
Yes.
We play the, okay.
But the only way that, you know, again, it would be a 4-way tie is if Sacred Heart wins out, which means beating Robert Morris this weekend. So then it would go to overall record against all 4 of those teams combined, and against all 4 of those teams, if everything turned out the way
it
turned out,
stupid.
It'd be 2-4.
That's a stupid tiebreaker, in my opinion. I mean, it makes sense, but I feel like there are a lot of other things that could be used.
You're right. You could. But I don't know. I think it makes sense because you're basically like – so basically it goes to like a tier level.
Yeah.
Also. Like you would look at – like if it wasn't a 4-way tie, like if it was just a 2-way tie,
mm-hmm.
you know, you would – like let's say like looking at the standings right now. Let's say, you know, St. Francis and Fairleigh Dickinson tie and Robert Morris is right below them in the standings. So it would first go, you know, if they were 1-1 against each other, it would go knock down. It would go, all right, how did both of you do against Robert Morris? And if one team was 2-0 against Robert Morris, the other was 1-1, you would go, okay, they have the edge.
I feel like, I mean.
It makes sense in the sense of, like, you did better against other teams. Now, granted, it's hard because it's 2 games.
Right.
And
there's
so
like,
much parity.
Yeah. Like, you could have a bad game. And, like, RMU lost to Mount St. Mary's.
That's why. And, like, I think that, you know, is interesting because it's almost like a bad loss doesn't hurt as much because as long as you're beating the top teams,
yeah,
a bad loss isn't going to get you in a tiebreaker.
Right.
Which is very interesting because arguably, you know, which makes sense, is like, you know, a loss to Mount St. Mary's or Central Connecticut.
Which we've lost to both of
them. Which, by the way, did you hear about the stuff that happened with Central Connecticut?
No.
I'm going to pull up the article. Great. You know, I like to point out when, you know, good student journalism is done.
Uh-huh.
And really good student journalism done by The Recorder, which is CCSU's. Let me pull up the article. So it's The Recorder. And so what happened was is there's 2 players that are suspended indefinitely from CCSU's team, and they need to win both games to make the postseason.
Why are they suspended?
Oh, so let me get to that. So essentially – so it's Cole and Hughley, which, by the way, are both very notable players on that team.
Okay.
So.
What numbers are they?
That I can't tell you, because even in the picture, it's Jameer Coleman in the picture. Because, again, I think they're smaller papers. They don't have a ton of stuff. They operate on the same kind of thing we do, WordPress. Oh, that's cool. Sorry. But what happened was, is during the under eight-minute timeout in the second half, a frustrated Cole kicked one of the small metal chairs, hitting Hughley in the face, who was sitting in an adjacent chair. Hughley, who, Hughley, who got hit in the face, was escorted off the court by an assistant coach, and Cole remained on the bench for the remainder of the game, while the Blue Devils fell by a score of 79-66.
Wait, who kicked the chair?
Cole kicked the chair, and it hit Hughley.
Oh,
in the
that
face.
Makes sense. Okay. He's the guy, he's number one.
Okay.
He's from Allentown. That's disappointing, because I'm about to not say nice things about him. It's from my side of the state.
I know.
When they were playing us, he made a basket, and there was like a group of fans that were like openly kind of rooting against him, and he made an obscene gesture towards them.
What was the obscene gesture? Oh, man.
Yeah, which I don't want to describe what it was on the air, because it's inappropriate.
It's not good. It's sexual in nature.
Yeah, and it's something that, in my opinion, should have been a technical foul.
Yeah.
Because that's...
Well, I'm sure if the ref would have seen it, but it's NEC refs.
But it's NEC refs, and they're the three blind mice every game on both sides, honestly.
So here's the other part of this article. So the suspensions for Cole and Hughley came due to conduct detrimental to the program and the university. So, I mean, clearly, I think what's happened is those two have been fighting.
Uh-huh.
Because why would the guy that got the chair into the face be suspended?
Right.
That's the only thing, you know? So, I mean, that really hurts. They said, as for a possibility of Cole and Hughley's return to the lineup for the final two games, Marshall gave less clarity. He goes, everything is indefinite right now, and everything else will be handled internally. Right now, we're going to concentrate on the guys here.
If they win and have a chance of making it, if that last game makes a difference, I think they'll play him.
I just think that's bad chemistry. I mean, bad. I mean,
I think they'll play Cole because he's like one of their top scorers.
You know, and again, like, it's hard because, like, you don't know how bad it's going to be. So,
right.
Their two games are LIU Brooklyn and Fairleigh Dickinson. So, LIU Brooklyn, let's take a look here. LIU Brooklyn 7-9. So that's a must win.
Yes.
Because that then gets them within one game, and then you just hope LIU Brooklyn takes an L. And LIU Brooklyn.
You mean Fairleigh Dickinson?
What do you mean?
What were you going to? Never mind.
Oh, all right. Yeah, because LIU Brooklyn.
I messed up.
Yeah, that's fine. It's fine. And then LIU Brooklyn has to go play Bryant in the last game, which Bryant is also. So if both LIU Brooklyn and Bryant lose on Thursday, then one of those teams will not make the postseason if Central Connecticut or Mount St. Mary's win both their games.
If Mount St. Mary's makes it into the playoffs, I'm going to be very mad.
I mean, what happens if, like, Robert Morris somehow pulls, like, beats the odds, gets the one seed, and then just loses to Mount St. Mary's?
Nothing would surprise me. It would not surprise me more. But for whatever reason, I don't understand it. I don't know why we always play terribly against them, but... Like, it's all the time, and I hate Mount St. Mary's.
Yeah.
So much.
Well, they have to go play FDU and St. Francis Brooklyn at the end, and their last game was a 58-81 loss to Bryant.
Oh, boy. So hopefully they'll get destroyed.
I don't think they're going to do anything super exciting. So the exciting thing that I want to start paying attention to is Defensive Player of the Year discussions.
For men's or women's?
For men's. Because for women's, it's going to be NECA Azebo.
Yeah.
She's sixth in steals per game, and she's ninth in blocks per game. She's the only player in the NEC ranked in the top 15 in both categories. I mean, literally, if they gave it to anyone else, I would literally just write a whole piece about how the NEC is dumb.
I mean, I think you could do that now. But.
Yeah. So did you watch the video I made on NECA Azebo?
Possibly.
It was on my Twitter account.
I don't remember.
All right. So, effectively, what I presented was a bunch of information. So, I looked at players that had been named NEC Player of the Week the most, and it came down to Jessica Kovach, Jade Johnson, Sydney Holloway, and Catherine Haynes. And basically, when I looked at them, they all blew away, besides Haynes, who was a little bit ahead, but they all blew away Azebo in scoring.
Uh-huh.
By like, you know, 8 to 10 points per game.
Right.
But in every other category, you know, there were categories where like Azebo was ranked in only one other player was like above her. So she was the only one that was more like consistent all around where like she had
a better.
Yeah. Like she had player. Nine. She had 9 rebounds per game, which was only behind in terms of those 4 players. It was only behind Holloway and Haynes. She's 6th in steals per game. Nobody else ranked on that list. She was 9th in blocks per game. The only other person on that list was Catherine Haynes. That was of any notability. And then in terms of field goal percentage, she shoots a higher percentage than Johnson and Kovach, who are, you know, the league's leading scorers. She does not shoot a higher clip than Haynes and Holloway.
But would you really expect her to?
No. And exactly. Here's the kicker. Because she does all of this in about 10 minutes less per game than all of the – like, the lowest is Haynes with 32. The highest is Johnson with 37, I believe. And Azebo averages 24. So she's – so my argument was that if she's not the player of the year, I mean, she's the most efficient player in the league because she does the most with a limited amount of time on the court.
Well, and if – honestly, I think if they give it to a shooter, they should just create a new award. They should make a shooter of the year and a player of the year because I don't believe player of the year is encompassed by how many points you score in the game.
Why don't you have an offensive and a defensive and then a most valuable player? Because I would argue that Nneka Azebo is the most valuable player in the Northeast Conference because nobody else creates as much efficiency in the amount of time that they're on the court.
No, and how many times in that St. Francis Brooklyn game did she have, was she triple teamed and still scored or still was able to get a rebound?
She draws coverage. Because the other thing is what she does too. If you watch a game, literally all she does on offense is she just gets inside the paint and then just moves around to try to get open in the paint. That's all she does. It's back and forth in the paint. And you draw 2 or 3 bodies. So what that does is either you're going to leave her open on the inside and she's going to do her work all day long, or you're going to leave Augustin, was Callahan, Carrasco, who else am I thinking of in terms of 3-point shooters? Bella Posit, all these great players on the perimeter. That's why that is why she's so valuable, because teams have to play to her or not to her, and you have to choose which is going to be more dangerous.
Right.
So St. Francis is a really good matchup against Robert Morris because Courtney Zeza is the only player that can really match up one-on-one with Azebo on the inside. That's why that game was so close, because they had someone who could directly match up with Azebo, which meant that even though they were taking perimeter shots, that you could guard both the perimeter. The way St. Francis ran defense was phenomenal because you had Zeza one-on-one, but then they ran a zone. And the way that zone went was they doubled anyone who had the ball, which is huge because when you have players like Hinoki Ikemetsu, and that's who I was forgetting.
Yes.
Hinoki Ikemetsu and Nina Gustin, who are great shooters, but they're smaller, and you double them,
right,
it's just really hard to get a pass off.
And I mean, that's just how all of our perimeter shooters are. Yes. Like, we don't really – we're not – and I think this kind of goes for both women's and men's. They're not very tall teams.
But that's what happens in the NEC, too.
Right.
You have to almost make a decision. Are you going to get the physical traits, or are you going to look for players who have the intangibles?
Right.
And I think both these teams have made the right decision having players that have intangibles.
Right, because we've seen with men's in the past – like, I mean, I'd say in the past 2 years, they've tried to bring in those – bigger guys, and they haven't panned out. You've had, I mean, nobody notable has stayed.
No.
That you've brought, like, that has transferred here.
Yeah. You know, it is interesting, too. So, in Ryan Peters' article that he wrote, one of the debates was Coach of the Year.
Right.
And, you know, again, the 4 coaches that were on there were all the 4 coaches that still, their team still have a chance to win the conference, which makes sense. And the big argument for Andy Toole that he wrote was the fact that, you know, no team in the NEC has seen as much turnover on their roster as Andy Toole has in the last 4 years. I mean, you think about it, the fact that we're seniors here and the only player we've seen play for 4 years is Matty McConnell.
Yeah.
It's insane. I mean, that's like, you know, you sit there and, you know what, I gotta pull it up. I gotta look up RMU men's basketball, and I gotta look who the heck was on that roster that were freshmen with them too, because there were some notable freshmen. There were guys that transferred and ended up doing some other things. let's see, 2015, 2016. All right. We're going to sort by, oh, they don't have it sorted by class. That's annoying. All right. So freshman in this, Isaiah Still.
Ugh.
Transferred. I never liked Isaiah Still.
No.
Still don't like Isaiah Still. I'm pretty sure he doesn't really do that much on Iona. He just shot a lot. Stephen Whitley, who, by the way, he transferred to Norfolk State, and he's killing it there.
Aren't they? But they're D2, right?
No, they're D1. Norfolk State's D1, I'm pretty sure.
But he's also from Norfolk, Virginia. So my guess is he might have transferred there to be closer to home.
Yeah, but I mean, like, well, and he didn't really get a lot of playing time with us, and I think it was just kind of like you find out you maybe don't like playing for Andy Toole. Anthony Pugh. He was 5'8", 150 pounds.
Gosh.
That's me-sized.
Yeah.
My favorite, my personal favorite. I know someone that actually knows him. I was working for the NBA this summer, and they were like, hey, do you know Jordan Lester? And I was like, yeah, he was his – short guy on our basketball. It says he's 6'2 on here.
He's not 6'2.
No way. That's false. From Sammamish, Washington. He plays D3 basketball now.
Am I surprised? Yeah. No.
Another guy. He still goes here. I see him around all the time. Nate Johnson.
He just quit the team?
Yeah, he was 5'11. 170-pound point guard. He just wasn't ever going to get time. So, that freshman class, again. And then you got Matty McConnell, who is the pride and joy of that freshman class. That's it. I mean, that was an awful, awful. I mean, that's not true. If you still had Whitley, Still, and McConnell all on this team this year, that'd be pretty exciting. But
I never thought Isaiah Still was a good player, though.
No, I don't think so either. I mean, I'll pull up his stats from when he was here, for crying out loud, because he shot awful percentages. He just shot the ball a lot.
Yeah.
His number was
number one because that's how many points he scored in a game.
Yeah, I mean, he went 84 for 238. He shot a 35% clip, a 29% clip from three-point range. Why was he given the ball so much? This was just his freshman year. And his percentages only went up about 3% shooting the next year. Like, yeah, if you get a lot of shots, you're gonna score some points.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just, like, that bugged me. And that's why I really like a guy like Andy Toole, is because, like, I asked him at practice yesterday. I was like, hey, Necco only averages about 24 minutes per game. When you get to the postseason, are you going to consider playing her more minutes? And he goes,
are you talking about Coach B? Or?
Yeah, Coach B. Sorry, not to switch back, but just to use the example here of, you know, the fact that Isaiah Still, they kind of just let him shoot and they gave him the minutes, even though, like, sometimes he would play really well and a lot of times he just really wouldn't. I just never got it, but the thing was is Coach B's like, look, you know, first off, that's an average, which I thought was a very great answer for him. He was like, some games she plays a lot more minutes, sometimes she doesn't. It depends on who's playing well, what's going on in the situation. Sometimes, you know, Erie's playing really well on the court and we want to keep her out there and do stuff like that. I mean, I'm paraphrasing at this point, but it was a good answer, you know. I think that's something Andy Toole's done really well this year, because I've seen that. I've seen that in games when they played LAU Brooklyn last Thursday. I was writing the recap for it, and the first 5 minutes of the game, not a soul could score on offense. I mean, they were doing nothing, and LAU Brooklyn was doing a great job of taking away the paint. So Andy Toole switched out everyone except for Matty McConnell. Just was like, we're going to wipe this whole thing. Mm-hmm. We're going to do it again. We're going to do something different.
Right.
And it didn't work right away, but the continually switching, changing the way you do things. You know, that was a game where Kobe Thomas was a big difference maker because he was fast and he could get into the paint and throw a bucket and he was athletic. I mean, there was one time he went up for a dunk. It got knocked out midair. He somehow regained possession of the ball midair, you know, controlled himself on the ground, got up, got the bucket. Nobody else on the Robert Morris team could do that because they're not that athletic.
No, and even across the NEC, I think it's unusual to see, you know, so many players being switched out and kind of lineups being changed on the fly as both the men's and women's teams do. Like, you'd see some of the teams that come here, and they have, I think LIU Brooklyn had, what was it, like 8 total players?
Yeah. Which, by the way, they have a bigger roster than that. It was real odd.
Yeah. Like, why? It doesn't make sense. And I feel like that's kind of a common theme, is where you have teams that don't have the depth. So you have, you know, Cole on CCSU, but he's their guy. So yeah. he's out there, but nobody else is really doing anything. I mean, we saw how many players on St. Francis Brooklyn that were like NBA height-wise yeah. and just couldn't do anything. But then you put in more guys and they still don't do anything.
Yeah.
That's, so it's and that's, I think, the difference.
Yeah. That's why, to me, I really think that Robert Morris in both men's and women's basketball mm-hmm. will make runs in the tournament, because the thing with Robert, both teams, is a lot of teams in the Northeast Conference, like you said, they lack depth. So when you're down at halftime, there's not a lot of adjustments you can make personnel-wise. Whereas with Coach Jewell and Coach Biscaglia's teams, mm-hmm. I mean, I've seen them, both teams, you know, multiple times this season, trailing at the half, and they come back and they win because mm-hmm. they know how to make adjustments. And, you know, I know that, you know, Andy Toole, there's been some tight games where the calls haven't gone their way, or, you know, you question the decisions made by Coach Toole. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, both of those guys are very, very intelligent
yes.
and understand what they're looking for from their guys and their girls. And they adjust well because they also have the personnel to do it. They built themselves really well. So, I mean, you know, I also love waving at tours, by yes. the way, when we go by. I'm always like, come to Robert Morris. We're sick. because I think we're dope. You know, but that I'm going to leave it there. So that
yeah, I think it's crazy to look at RMU and have arguably their best shooter out for the year and have lost one game in conference.
I know. And it was
to Mount St. Mary's, who, I mean, I think in that game it was just an off game. Which I
in
mean,
in college, it's going to happen.
Right, you're going to have an off. Like, there's no doubt about it. It's very difficult to go undefeated. Even the top, you know, the teams in the top 25, top 10. You look, they have off games. It happens.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
So the fact that they were able to destroy everyone for the greater part of the season, without their best player, I think shows a lot. And men's, I mean, they had a tough stretch, but they were controlling this conference for the greater portion of the first half, essentially, of the season.
Yeah. No, I mean, it just it is exciting. Like, I mean, in our 4 years, we've never seen a men's basketball team this good.
No.
I mean, they've been, for lack of a better word, disappointing.
Yes.
Because the expectations were always that they were going to be better.
Right, because I'm especially coming after a
NCAA tournament berth.
Right, you expect that's now the expectation. It's not the exception.
Yep.
And it's kind of, especially the past 2 years, it's kind of been like, oh, that was a fluke.
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't think, I think Coach Toole is better than that. I know he does receive some criticism because they haven't been able to get back, but I think he's a good coach.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I'll tell you though, man, it's going to be a whole lot of fun in the postseason.
It really is.
I'm very excited. I will be at every women's basketball game. We will be doing full-fledged women's basketball tournament.
I don't think the quarterfinal game.
Huh?
I think we're still in. Oh, no, they're later. Never mind. Sorry. We'll miss the men's quarterfinal game.
Yes, we'll miss the men's quarterfinal, and then I might miss the Saturday game because I think I have to work lacrosse. Oh, no. The games are going to be at noon or 2. I will be there for both.
So it's, and I think it depends on what seed we get as to whether we're here or somewhere else.
I hope we're here.
Obviously.
I mean, yeah. Hey man, number 2 seed would be kind of nice. That to me is the realistic goal.
Yes.
I think that there's, I mean, let's you know, for just for, you know, the heck of it. Let's see who St. Francis plays this weekend. They play the same teams we do. I'm dumb.
Yeah, but
in backwards order.
So we play Sacred Heart tonight. So that means they're playing Bryant tonight?
Right. Yeah. No, they're playing Wagner
tonight. Wagner tonight.
Yeah, Wagner tonight. So 8-8 Wagner needs a win. They've lost 2 in a row. They're looking to bounce back and, you know, get a higher seed because they still have the possibility of technically jumping as high as a 2 seed if things mm-hmm. go their way. St. Francis, which is crazy, by the way, how much parity there is that St. Yeah. Francis and Robert Morris could all drop as low as like a 7 or not like a 6 seed.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy to me. You know, St. Francis coming off a tough 66-69 loss to LIU Brooklyn. That's tough. I mean, that's real tough. And that was a big win for LIU Brooklyn. because that puts them, I mean, that was a desperation win for them. They knew mm-hmm. that they needed to put themselves in better position with the win. They can jump as high as a 4 seed. LAU, Brooklyn, and Bryan can. Yeah. So, all right. So, look at these scenarios. Yeah. So, if St. Francis loses out, they can drop as low as a 4 seed.
Mm-hmm.
If Robert Morris and Fairleigh Dickinson lose out, they can drop as low as a 6 seed. If Sacred Heart loses out, they can drop as low as an 8 seed. These are the top 4 seeds that could all plummet up to 4 spots if they lose out on the weekend, which is crazy because, you know, again, usually this time of year. So the other thing that Ryan Peters pointed out in his article,
mm-hmm.
Too bad I'm not relevant. He'd be really happy that I'm pointing him out. But he's probably just like, it's just some kid. But most years in the Northeast Conference,
mm-hmm.
the team that's, you know, won the NEC regular season has had at least 14 wins, or like they go like 14-4.
Mm-hmm. That's not possible this year.
No. And realistically, you could see, I mean, you could potentially see a team that has 11 wins win the conference, or 12 wins win the conference. Like that just shows you how tight this conference is this year, which is why I think this NEC tournament is going to be good,
because yes.
you're really not going to be able to go into any game and be like, yeah, this is a definite win. Like, they totally got this.
Right.
So it'll be cool. It'll be exciting.
Even if it doesn't go our way, which I really hope it does, because that would be great. But like, it's just, it makes it more fun when it's this way, when you don't go into the game and you're like, ugh, we're gonna definitely like this.
Yeah, because that's how it's been for Robert Morris men's basketball. Is we get like the 7 seed, and granted, they've won the first round each of the last
which
2 years,
which is wild.
Yeah, there's only been 1 year in the last.
It was our freshman year that they didn't.
Yeah, it's the only time in Andy Tool's career.
Wagner.
Yeah, so Wagner is really good. Yeah, that was the only year in Andy Tool's career where he's made the NEC tournament and not gotten out of the first round. So,
which is crazy, because I mean, how many times has he even missed the tournament? I don't think that's happened.
He's made the tournament.
I'm talking about the NEC.
Oh,
not.
I don't think he's ever missed the NEC tournament. This is his 9th year as head coach. I mean, I know that
which means
everyone makes it, but that's still pretty good.
But still, to arguably be in the top 4 every single year.
Yeah. Who went to the tournament last year for the NEC? Was that Mount?
No, I believe. Actually, it might have been.
Yeah, I think it was
either them or Fairleigh Dickinson.
Because, you know, Junior Robinson.
The shortest player in NCAA basketball.
Yeah. No, you're right. No, last year it was LIU Brooklyn.
Oh. The year before, was it Fairleigh Dickinson?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's
yes,
what I
was
thinking. And the year before that was Wagner.
Yeah. Ugh. I want an NCAA tournament berth. That's all I want.
Let's get the get the trophy out of the New York, New Jersey region.
Yeah, for real, though. I mean,
nobody
just
wants
chilling
that.
There, man.
Yeah. For the Northeast Conference, that's not really Northeast.
Yeah. Who, what? All right, so, yeah. All right, previous, let's look at some history here.
Yeah, because we have nothing else.
Last year, the regular season champion was Wagner, and then LIU Brooklyn was the tournament champion.
Wow, so they must have had a lot of seniors graduate if they're just average this year.
Wagner or LIU Brooklyn?
Wagner.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's all the NEC, which is
that's
tough.
True.
They had JoJo Cooper graduate. He was real good.
I don't know.
I
pay attention to the players on our team. I don't know anybody else.
You know, the NEC used to have divisions?
Really?
For 2 years.
Well, weren't there, we had more teams, right?
Because
they had Albany and Monmouth and
so there
who
was
else?
The,
there
the
was
NEC
one.
Quinnipiac?
Yes.
Yeah. There was NEC North and NEC South. Robert Morris was the South. They won the
really?
NEC South the first 2 years, 82 and 83. They went to the tournament.
This was like a long time
ooh,
ago.
Marist was also in.
Interesting.
Yeah. But, all right. So, the year before, so it was not fair. It was Fairleigh Dickinson our freshman year.
Yeah.
Wagner
that
won the. Yeah.
Right.
Mount St. Mary's was last year. Or not last year, the year before, like 2016,
okay.
2017. So it's been. So Wagner has won 2 of the last 3 NEC regular season titles, but has not made the tournament since 2003.
Oh, boy.
That has to sting a little bit. Whereas Robert Morris,
three times, I think? Or
to the tournament?
Yeah.
With Andy Tool, they've gone 3 times.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Because they've gone. Have they gone 3 times? No, I'm sorry. They have not gone 3 times. They've gone twice. They went in 2009, 2010, and they went in 2014, 2015. Mm. Yeah, because 2009, 2010, that was Andy Tool, right? Maybe. No. I think that still was Mike Rice.
Maybe.
Yeah. No, you're right. So that he's only gone to the tournament once.
Once.
Yeah.
How many times? And we've been what?
NIT twice, CIT once.
And then, but overall, I think we've been to the tournament three times.
Like Robert Morris, like yeah, in total?
In total. For men's basketball. Because I think it was like 82, 83 was
two,
one of them.
2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Wow.
Eight times. 82, 83.
I knew that one.
89, 90.
Okay.
92. And then 09, 010, or 2010. And then 2015 was the last time. So
can we talk about just how dominant RMU sports were in like the through the 90s?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Every single sport, if you go, and if, I mean, I'm assuming all of our listener is from RMU.
All of our listener. Yeah. Like we only have one. Probably right.
But if you go around to the different athletic areas and look, because they usually have the championship banners, like the, not the, or the years or whatever they've been. You look, a lot of them are like in the 90s. I mean, football won the first five NEC championships from, mm-hmm. was that 96 to 2000. Basketball went to the tournament twice in the decade. I know soccer was huge then. I don't know about volleyball or the sports that have since been axed.
No offense, but nobody cares.
No. But, I mean, I think softball went a few times. Like, they were NEC champions in the 90s.
Had an incredible – they had a run in the 2000s, too. They were so good.
So it's just like – and even the stories I've heard about our campus back then, I feel like were just crazy.
Yeah. So, all right.
Maybe that's something you could write. Robert Morris, a school of the 90s.
I will say, though, you know who's been really good in this decade? Since 2010, LIU Brooklyn has gone to the tournament four times. They went 2011, 2012, 2013, three straight seasons, and then 2018. So, I mean, that's pretty good. In the last 10 years, so from 2009 to 2018, so last 9 years, Robert Morris has gone three times. LIU Brooklyn's gone four times. So they've dominated the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's been Robert Morris and then Mount St. Mary's. If you go back to 2008, so if you really go 10 years, mm-hmm. Mount St. Mary's has two. Robert Morris has three. LIU Brooklyn has four.
Okay.
And then FDU has one, which is crazy because, you know, again, you see teams like Wagner getting two regular season titles. That sucks about the NEC, man.
Yeah, you could win the regular season.
You could have a great,
you could amazing, lose to the eight seed,
you know,
really.
Again, like Robert Morris women's basketball could still, you know, just not make the tournament.
Yeah, which is crazy to me.
Because, like, watching them from our perspective, you know, they're great. But, again, that just shows you how bad the NEC is.
Overall, everything about it.
Yeah.
For those of you that don't know, I don't like the NEC. Yeah.
All right. So, you know what? Just for kicks, because, you know, why the heck not? Let's just create, because we can, a men's basketball bracket.
All okay. Right?
So I'm gonna go through. Yeah, pull up the standings, and we're gonna kind of go through matchups here.
So let's. Why don't we go with it as if the season ended today?
Yes, because so, I don't want to make picks and have to do tiebreakers.
Right.
And all that stuff.
So we have St. Francis, Pennsylvania at one,
playing Bryant at the eighth seed.
Right. You have Fairleigh Dickinson playing LIU Brooklyn.
You have Robert Morris playing Wagner.
And then you have Sacred Heart and St. Francis Brooklyn.
All right. So let's start with the top seed here: St. Francis versus Bryant. I think St. Francis is the clear winner there.
I don't think Bryant's. No.
Especially because they're 2-11 on the road. I think that is very telling that they haven't won on the road at all.
Mm-hmm.
So St. Francis wins. Now you have Fairleigh Dickinson, LU Brooklyn. Now, before we get into that, because they still play one more time, which is interesting because that could also, you know, determine seeding for both of them.
Right.
But when they played for the first time this year, Fairleigh Dickinson won 80-77.
I'm going to give this one to LIU Brooklyn.
Okay.
I feel like for whatever reason, the 7 seed is very, very capable of upsetting a 2
and
seed.
I think
it's happened almost every year we've been here.
And I think the way this tournament's going to go this year, I think you have to invest in an upset. I think it'd be dumb not to.
And Fairleigh Dickinson has had so many close games that I wouldn't be surprised if at this point their luck has kind of run out in
exactly.
the way that it falls and LIU wins. I'm going to say RMU wins because, you know, RMU.
Plus, like, what would be the fun? We were like, yeah. I mean, they're also playing Wagner, and I don't know. I have confidence against Wagner.
Yeah.
Sacred Heart, St. Francis, Brooklyn. That, ooh. Well, let's look at the matchups again. Let's break it down.
Sacred Heart is 8-2 at home, and St. Francis, Brooklyn is 6-10 on the road.
They split their season series. The first win went to St. Francis, Brooklyn, who won 92-85. The second one went to Sacred Heart, who won 71-62. The home team won both games.
That makes sense because St. Francis Brooklyn is 10-2 at home.
Yes. So I'm going to pick the home team. I'm going to say Sacred Heart.
Yeah, I'll go with that.
So, all right. So you got to reseed it here. And it's the highest seed playing the lowest seed. So the lowest seed remaining would be LIU Brooklyn. So
right.
It would be St. Francis versus LIU Brooklyn. We said, so Robert Morris is the next highest remaining seed. They would play Sacred Heart. So St. Francis versus LIU Brooklyn. Is there any chance that LIU Brooklyn shocks the world, pulls off an upset? They're a team that is decent, and they already beat St. Francis at St. Francis.
I think both of these games are very close.
Yeah.
I think tonight will
Sacred
be
Sacred Hearts, yeah. I mean, that's going to be the telling thing is how Robert Morris does it.
Because we beat them here, right?
Yes.
Yes.
And Robert Morris was trailing at the half. No, they were leading, but not by a lot. That was another. I mean, Robert Morris wins a lot of tight games. That's just the style when you have a defensive team.
Right.
It's so hard to pick against the one seed, but I am. I'm going to say LU Brooklyn.
Really?
Because they go. They're successful in the tournament. They made it last year as a four seed.
That's true.
That there's some intangibles there. But, you know, this is also the point where you can disagree with me and go, no.
Yeah, I'm going to say, just for the sake of the matchup I want, I'm going to say St. Francis wins.
All right, so your ideal championship, and I think Robert Morris goes and beats Sacred Heart. If they get Sacred Heart, I think that's a win for the Colonials. Mm-hmm. So mine would be LIU Brooklyn, Robert Morris, the three seed. Yeah.
I don't know what just happened.
I don't know what he's saying to me either. Yeah, he's going to text me. That's every time I'm trying to signal me. Yeah, he's shooting me a text. So
you have LIU, RMU.
Which I think Robert Morris would then go win.
Yes.
It would be at Robert Morris.
Yes.
I think if they play St. Francis in the championship game at St. Francis, they lose.
I think they win if they play St. Francis at St. Francis.
Yeah.
Because both games have been decided by 3 points, and it's very difficult to beat a team 3 times in a season.
Yeah. So.
Especially in the NEC.
Mm-hmm.
So either, I mean, at the end of the day, we both have RMU winning. We're not biased.
No, but I mean,
but realistically,
I think here's the thing. If the matchups, I think the toughest matchup for Robert Morris out of the gate would be if they go play Wagner. I think that's the toughest one for them, just the first round in general. I think Sacred Heart's not as bad, and I think the only way that it's more dangerous is if they play St. Francis. I think Fairleigh Dickinson, you know, they barely got away on the road, and they had a lot of really good calls against
mm-hmm.
Robert Morris. I mean, mm-hmm. they won by 3 in double overtime with McConnell and John Williams fouled out.
Right.
I mean, the odds of that happening again, no way.
No. And we beat them the first time at home as well.
Mm-hmm. So.
So now what happens if, I mean, say, this is just the assumption, St. Francis wins out. Claim gets the number one seed. What happens if we end up being the two seed? Like, we also went out and Fairleigh Dickinson does not. That would put us against LIU Brooklyn.
Which right I think is a manageable matchup at home.
Yes.
I like that matchup at home. I think LIU Brooklyn is a dangerous team.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think against Robert Morrison, and they showed in that second half that mm-hmm. I don't think they're going to be able to throw together an entire game against Robert Morris.
I think, I mean, right now, as it stands, I think Fairleigh Dickinson is a very weak two seed. I feel like they've had a lot of very close conference wins.
Well, and
but
2 weeks ago, they were, you know, they've won 3 in a row. They were 7-6,
mm-hmm.
you know. They were a middle-of-the-road team kind of all year.
Yeah, and they've had some luck on their side. Out of the top four, I would definitely say Fairleigh Dickinson is the most likely to lose out the gate. Would it be nice if it wasn't Robert Morris St. Francis? Yes. But I think that might be the most realistic matchup.
Yeah.
If they're playing, you know, another team, I still think it goes towards us. I just think it's a little bit easier. Maybe not easier, but just a different game. than if it's St. Francis, because you know if it's St. Francis, RMU in the championship game, Maddie's going to put everything out there because he's never beaten them. And if his one win is to defeat them to be postseason champions and to move on to the NCAA tournament.
Yep. Like, absolve of sins.
That ends everything. That's, you know, I mean, and I know we both pick it because we would really want to see them go to the NCAA tournament, because I feel like we kind of, like, I don't know, like we came in right after they did it expecting it to happen, and it has yet to happen, you know?
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And I feel like both of us would be pretty bitter if they went next year and not this year. Because, I know I would. Because they go the years that we're not here, and it's very frustrating.
Yeah, but, I mean, we've got to see some cool things, though. I mean, women's basketball's made the tournament twice.
That's true.
Women's hockey made the first NCAA tournament ever in the history of their program.
That's true.
Which was a magical season.
Hey, interesting fact. I've been to every NCAA game that our school has had except for the men's lacrosse, I think.
Wow.
Yeah. And since we've been here. Wow. I went to UConn and Notre Dame for women's basketball. I went to Wisconsin for women's hockey. I even went to Ohio State for volleyball freshman year.
Oh, dude, I forgot about that. I covered that.
I think there was there one more?
No.
Was it just the four?
Well, you didn't go to the only one you didn't go to was men's lacrosse.
Right.
But that's because, you know, that was after the school year.
Yeah.
So nobody went to men's lacrosse.
No.
And we had a writer there, though.
Who did they play?
Maryland.
That's
they
right.
They were up at half, dude.
That's right.
Yeah,
I remember that.
That was the one that
the
I
upset
thought.
Upset that should have been.
That would have been wild. But it's Maryland, and you know, it's Maryland. That would have been freaking
insane. I have a friend that goes to Maryland, and I was bashing her. I remember, like, I didn't watch the game, but I watched the the ESPN updates as they came in. I was trolling her hard until they, you know, came back and beat us.
Yeah, I mean, hey, that's what you can do as Robert Morris. I mean, when we were at Kentucky, we might have yelled out the window, you know, 59, 57.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah. It was pretty fun when we played Eastern Kentucky. We practiced at Kentucky's practice field. We're like, wow, it smells like an upset here.
I love it. I love it. So, yeah. So, that's good.
Yeah. The arena's coming together very well.
I'm just sad that we're not going to be there for it.
I mean, we'll get to go in it. I think that's...
Like, that's the only reason I don't want to get a job around Pittsburgh is because...
To come back for it.
Oh, and I'd totally be a member of the 1921 Club, by the way. They'd be like, what do you do on your weekends? I'd be like, I just go to Robert Morris
games.
That's it.
That's my life.
Me, if you were around, you would come.
I definitely would.
So.
But, you know, I don't really want to be around Pittsburgh afterwards, but I think I would come back. I'd try to come back for the first or one of the first games.
Yeah,
you know, just to see it and be in that atmosphere, because it's gonna be great. Like, it's so awesome that this thing is being built.
Mm-hmm.
Do I wish that they would have tried to get a little more fundraising and made it a convertible for a hockey rink? Yes, but you know, life doesn't work like that sometimes.
Yeah, I know, it's a dream.
I have heard through the grapevine that RMU's tried to buy where Kmart used to be to build a hockey arena there. But I've also heard Moon Township has blocked them from
And we'd have to sell the island, and I think that's a bigger loss. So.
I was so sure that we leased the island.
I have no clue. I've just been told that's one of the big reasons.
Yeah.
So.
And honestly, I don't think they would have to. They make a ton of money off of everything else that happens down there.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know.
Maybe we talk about that next time.
That's definitely a good thing.
The RMU building rumors.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Come back from spring break. Actually, maybe not, because we'll have a lot to cover when we come back from spring break.
Yeah.
A lot will have happened. Hey, this is our last one for a week and a half, unless we somehow do a live, do an episode in down in Tampa.
I mean, you know.
We get stopped by TSA. Why are you bringing microphones with you.
It's fine. It's fine. We're just going to
do it. We're doing a podcast
live from spring training. I'd love that. I'd
live on the berm here at Spectrum Field.
Yep. Huge fan. All right. So we got 8 minutes left. Is there any other burning desires of things you want to talk about?
I'm really disappointed that men's hockey has been the way that they have been this year, which, I mean, I understand why they are, because they're really young, so, like, you're going to have years like this. It's just, like, for all the success that we've seen them have at our time here, it's really sad that this is the way that they go out for us.
Yeah.
I kind of feel bad for Marat, because I feel like he takes a lot of the burden for their losses.
I really hope that, like, next year, like, a lot of those freshmen really, like, figure it out.
Yeah.
Because that'd just be, like, cool.
And to have, because he, right, I mean, granted, there haven't been a ton of goalies, but he is the winningest goalie in our history now. Mm-hmm. It only took him 3 years to do it, and his third year has been pretty rocky because of, you know, being surrounded by freshman defense. But yeah, I mean, for his sake, I hope they do something next year, because I feel like of all the players, he deserves it. Because you think about it, he's really one of the first consistent lone starting goaltenders we've had.
Yeah.
You know, I think he, I mean, do you think he'll, what, where do you think his path is after graduating from Robert Morris?
Marat?
Yeah.
I think he'll be ECHL to start. Mm-hmm. And I think from there, you know, because no Robert Morris Colonials made it all the way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, arguably Ferguson's got the best shot.
Mm-hmm.
As he's currently with the Marlies. You know, he's been bouncing up and down between NHL and ECHL.
Whatever happened to Cody Wido?
Cody Wido is still...
Is he with the Baby Pens, or is he back in Wheeling?
That's a really good question.
Because I feel like he was the great RMU kind of conquest in years past. And Zach Lynch, I feel like, has kind of... Like, he hasn't fizzled out, but, like, he hasn't...
Let's see.
Kind
Cody
of.
Wido,
mm-hmm.
most recently, is playing with a Swiss League hockey team now.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
HC Thurgo. Oh. So, yeah.
Yeah, so it's definitely Brady Ferguson.
Yeah, no. Wido's 27. That's the problem. It's too old now.
Yeah, his time has passed.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate, because...
Yeah. He was with Wilkes-Barre for... 9 games last year, and he played 53 with Wheeling. So he kind of bounced in between. But the thing was, is he was really good in Wheeling. He had in his last 3 seasons with Wheeling, he had 56 points, 60 points, and 50 points.
Solid. Sometimes you have players that fill those rosters, and that's kind of the unfortunate part of it. Because would we have loved to see an RMU guy in the NHL? Yes. But sometimes it doesn't pan out that way. I think Marat's ceiling is... I think he could end up one day being a pretty solid backup in the NHL.
Yes, I think so too.
Because I feel like, you know, you see a lot of our hockey team, you know, the joke is that they're all older than everybody, but they do come in from juniors, so they are, you know, they're not 18. But I think Marat is still... I think he's like, what, 20 right now?
No, he's a little bit older than that. Yeah. I think because you always come in a little bit older because
you're
juniors.
Yeah, but I still think he's young for coming in from juniors.
Yes.
So I think he has a very high ceiling for playing at this level and winning the amount of games that he's won with the team that he has around him.
Yes, I definitely agree with that. So the other thing I want to point out is Zach Lynch is currently in the AHL.
With who?
The Hartford Wolfpack. He's on a loan.
Okay.
This year he played for the Wheeling Nailers. He had 52 points there, but he's on loan to the Hartford Wolfpack.
They're the Blackhawks minor league or AHL affiliate, I think.
Let's see. Hartford Wolfpack.
No, sorry. That's the Chicago Wolves. That's there.
Yeah.
At least that was.
It was. It's Vegas now.
Oh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
You know what? Elite Prospects doesn't say who they're affiliated with, which you'd think would be kind of a thing people would care about.
Yeah, let me see. You said the Hartford Wolfpack?
Yeah.
Hartford Wolfpack. Googling. They're the Rangers AHL
team.
That
makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. They're also in Rangers colors, so. Yeah. Well, that'd be interesting.
Yeah.
See,
But I think, I mean, So say Murat does make it into the NHL, who, and this is, I mean, years down the line, so we have no idea who would be there at this time, but who, what team do you think he would go to?
Who?
Murat.
Murat? Ooh.
Even in their system, who do you think he would be? I think he'd be with the Canucks.
Because he did go to their camp.
He went to their camp, I think, twice.
Yeah, he did, which to me shows interest, too.
Yes.
So.
I think it was this past year and the year before.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think if they go on some nuts run and he plays outstanding through the Atlantic Hockey Tournament, I think that just, I mean, obviously that just helps his value. But I think even he has one more season and he's been phenomenal for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. So, all right. Well, looks like this is all the time we have for
this show. Yeah, last one.
Last one before
for the beginning of the end.
Oh, dude, no. I don't want to hear that. I don't want to hear beginning of the end.
Because really, I mean, after you get back from spring break, we have half a semester.
Dude, not good, dude. I need more school.
Yeah, Spencer has. I've tried to talk to Spencer about end of the year things, and he has refused to discuss it with me.
Yeah,
he's in the denial part.
I relate to that.
Of grief.
Well, I mean, it's weird, like, not knowing where I'm going to be in, like, you know, like a couple months.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, man.
It's such a, we're entering a weird, almost like enigma phase right now.
Not good, man. Not good. I mean, it is good because, like, that means that we made it.
Right. But we did what we were supposed to do.
It's hard, dude. I'm trying to, like, live in the moment and, like, enjoy myself in college, make sure I'm doing well in class, but I'm also like, all right, I need to, like, figure out what the heck I'm doing.
Yeah, you're trying to relax but also stay on top of things and not worry about the future but also look at everything that's going to happen, and it's a lot.
It's a mess.
It really is. But it's fine. We're fine. Yeah. Everything's fine.
All right. Well, next time... Yeah, this time next week we'll be, you know, still in Florida.
Beautiful.
Living it up. So thank you everyone for tuning in to Will and Sam in the morning. RIP Sam Ferentz. Have a great rest of your day.